Can everyone hear me? Yeah. Okay, good. So we are going to continue our discussion about Hashgacha, and we're going to begin today with the approach of the Baal Shem Tov, which we introduced last time. The Mar Makomos you can download. There's actually one additional Mar Makom that I wanted to put on, but I didn't have a chance to upload it, but it'll be okay anyway. We'll say it outside. And if you want to see it inside, I'll share it with you on the chat. So we mentioned last time the approach that we have to consider when studying the Baal Shem Tov. And now let's begin. So there's a pasuk in Koheles. The pasuk says, it's Perek Yud Aleph, pasuk Gimel, Makom sheyipol ha'etz, sham yehu. Wherever the tree falls, or whatever the wood falls, the stick falls, that's where it should be. That's where it's meant to be. And this pasuk could be understood as indicating that the tree fell in a particular place, in a particular way, for a particular reason. So even though we mentioned before the Gemara Chulin on Zayin Amid Beis that says Ein Adam no kefetz ba'o elim kein machrizin alav milamala, which might suggest that that is true only for people. A person, if something happens to a person, that's because there was a hachraza. But over here, perhaps, if that's indeed what the pasuk is saying, so it seems to be going possibly further. Here the pasuk doesn't mention Adam. So if you take a look at the first source over here, this is from the Pri Haaretz, from Menachem Mendel of Vitebsk, who was one of the early Hasidic thinkers. And he was really third generation of Hasidus. He was a Talmud of the Maggid of Mezrich. And he writes like this. V'hine be'emes rachok me rishaim, v'yafig liban laham in hashgacha pratis kazu. She'en adam nokif etzbo, v'en shum esev ne'akar, v'en shum even nizrak, kiim bizman uv'makom haroilo, k'ma'amar makom she'ipol ha'etz sham yehu. So you see he's taking this pasuk, and he's understanding it as teaching us that it's not just adam nokif etzbo, but even an Evan, even an Eitz. He might be alluding to a Chazal that says that if a grass grows, it's because there's a mazel that's associated with it. One way or the other, that's what he seems to be saying. Even the smallest, seemingly most insignificant things that happen are intended. Why is that? So the truth is, it makes a lot of sense. Why shouldn't it be that way? In other words, you know, the Alter Rebbe writes in the second chapter, Shar Yichud V'Emunah, he says, where do mistakes in the idea of Hashgacha come from? Why would somebody deny Hashgacha, as deny all-encompassing Hashgacha? It's because they imagine that HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world in a way that's similar to the way we would run the world. So we're limited. We're so memela. If we were running the world, we would delegate. We would maybe make something like Teva and have something like Teva govern things, and we would only intervene as needed. But that's a fallacious assumption, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't govern in the way that humans would govern. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, so it was Yesh Me'ayin. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu could create. Humans can't really have the capacity to make something Yesh Me'ayin. Everything that we make is Yesh Me'yesh. So when we make something, so after we've made it, it loses its connection to the creator, to the maker. If a silversmith fashions a Kiddush cup out of a block of silver, so once he's made it, it's done, it's finished. He's not and need not be involved anymore at that point. And so people imagine that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates, so it's the same way, but of course it's false. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't create Yesh Me'yesh, he creates Yesh Me'ayin. It's a true creation. It's not just a change in formation. It's not just bringing out its potential, but it's an absolutely true creation. So Mimela, the existence of the will, the world, is totally, totally, constantly in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's willing it to exist. It's a constant creation in a sense. And likewise, everything that happens is directly coming for us. So there's an adrabba. There's no reason to imagine that there would be any type of self-governance of the world. And so why should it be otherwise? Again, another source that seems to emphasize this point. This is from Imre Pinchas, Rav Pinchas of Karetz, who was also a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov. So he writes, Ha'adam tzarech lahamin shafilu kash hamunach al ha'aretz hu begzeres Hashem yisborach. Even a straw on the ground, how it's lying, where it's lying, that also is begzeres Hashem. Shegazer lios munach sham, v'ani, meaning an I. So he said that in the name of the Baal Shem Tov, and he's saying, this is the Talmud of Rav Pinchas talking. So the Talmud of Rav Pinchas say, Shamati kimeduma bizeh lashon, sheyesh hashgacha pratis eich tehe munachas im haktzavos l'kan l'kan, as ad kedei kach, which direction the edges are, like where exactly, how the straw is created, right? That too is Begzeiras Hashem Yisbarach. So this does seem to be a very novel approach. We mentioned last week that there are some Rishonim who present a all-encompassing type of hashgacha when it comes to people. And we'll see a little bit later today, hope maybe even with respect to animals. But here we have something going much, much further, seemingly, that the hashgacha applies even to inanimate objects. There's a letter you have up here from the final Lubavitcher Rebbe, Rav Nachum Nendel Schneerson, and he summarizes the Baal Shem Tov's view as follows. Hashgacha pratis b'chol prat uprat mi me'oros ha'adam v'gam ha'datzach. So even datzach, even inanimate objects, domim, tzomeach, chai, even, not just animals, but even like we saw, even a stone, hashgacha apratis applies to all of them. Now, here we have to ask a question, which is that if you remember, we saw the Rishonim, the Ramban also, many other sources stress that there is a higher degree of providence for, let's say, those that are righteous, Raglei Chasidav Yishmor, and they quoted many psukim, and there's many chazals, the Zohar even says something like that. So how do we understand that? In other words, if hashgacha pratis is shaykh to everything, so mimela, what room is there for that differentiation? So he answers this question. He writes, chalukim ba'ofen hashgacha avalo bepratiosa l'shitas Baal Shem Tov. In other words, even the Baal Shem Tov agrees that there's some differentiation, but not be'etzem. So in the ofen, in the manifestation of the hashgacha, yeah, then tzaddiki have a higher level of hashgacha. You might be able to see it more. The nisim, the mofsim, they'll be more different. They'll be more extraordinary. But it doesn't show that they actually have more hashgacha. And he writes, this is taka different than the seat of the Baal Shem Tov, Masha en kein shekadmuhu, the lo od, Elishakulam Madregos Nalos Bashkach Al Kopanim Nes Milubash. So they're all different levels of Hashkacha, and even the smallest things have Hashkacha, so it's a Nes Milubash. It's a miracle that's enclosed, that's hidden, enclosed, but it's not but it's still an ace. It's still an ace. So what he's saying is again that, yeah, in Achanami, we talked about last week, you know, how do we understand, how do we look at this idea that the Achronim do seem to take a different approach than Rishonim, at least some. But be that as it may, he's acknowledging this difference and saying that this really is something new. So then we have to ask, well, what's behind this radical departure, right? Why should this be? Why does he look at hashgacha this way? Or to put it a little differently, does this perspective on hashgacha relate to his broader theology? Is it just a local point, or is it part of something bigger? So I think the answer is that it is part of something bigger. And it comes down to really the way in which Hasidus looks at the world. Now, I should point out that I'm referring to Hasidus, and I'm right, you know, today I've been clumping everything together, and that's not accurate. There are many great thinkers in Hasidus, and they don't always agree with everything and the like. So I'm not saying that everybody agrees with everything I'm saying, but I think this is a trend and a strain, and you see it in many, many sources. So where does this all come from? So the Hasidus emphasizes that, stresses the godliness everywhere and in everything. So we'll see one quick source. This is from the Maggid of Mezrich. And he's coming off of the Zohar. The Zohar says, Le sasar panui mine, there is no place devoid of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So the question is, what does that mean? So he writes like this, Le sasar panui mine, this is the next source, Likutei Amarim, Osh Rei Shamach Gimel, V'hakol malei mechios haborei baruch Hu. Everything is filled with the chios, with the life of the borei baruch Hu. Nimtza kol ma sheroe, hu roe rak chiyos habore hanimshach bo. So everything you see is the chiyos habore that is being drawn through it. Now, it's not the bore itself. This is pantheism, sometimes known as panentheism. But everything is the chiyos habore. And so the Mahalich, I think, of the Baal Shem Tov on Hashgacha is a reflection of this premise. In other words, if we encounter God wherever we look, then there is no reason to imagine that anything we see, even the seemingly unimportant things like the placement of a leaf, is random. Position, like everything else in creation, is an act of God. So let's try to elaborate a little bit. And I want to try to show how the Chiddush of the Baal Shem Tov, the Chiddush of Hasidus, which is in fact a bit different than that which preceded it, and that which maybe you find in some of the more Litvish presentations of this idea, like in the Nefesh HaChaim. A Talmud of mine, Alicia Pearl sent me a blog post of Rav Yosef Avivi. I don't know who he is. But he made this point in this post, and I think he's making a good point, though maybe I'm not going to say it as strongly as he is, and we'll explain in a minute. So there's no question that in the Sifrei Kabbalah, we find the idea, we find many sources that emphasize that God is behind everything that exists. Let's just take a look at the Zohar over here, where it says Tikune Zohar, Tikun Shivim. Les asar panui mine, kenishmisa dishtakachas b'chol eiver ve'eiver degufa. V'is eiver ilah d'iskari shem havaya al shmei d'shultanuse ba'asar yediya. V'is train eivarin ilayin mine d'iskariyun havaya Hashem Elokim. Known b'shmai v'ara. So this is the Seder Shtal Shalos. This Eber Diskari Elokim, the Shultanose B'chol Ara. This Asra, the Shultanose Ihu Basrein, Avrein V'mocha Uveliba. The Ale Itmar, Ki Hashem Hu Elokim, Ein Od Melvado. So we have this Koach, Elokim, and it's through that the Koach behind everything in the world is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So there's no doubt, and everybody agrees, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is behind everything that exists. And like we saw in that passage of the Zohar, there's this Seder Vishtal Shalos in terms of how it goes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to what we perceive. So while there is absolute dependence on HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that dependence doesn't undermine the reality of our existence. So while Hashem is the force, the koach, like it says over there, behind all that exists, we exist. And let's just take a look at how the Nefesh Chaim puts it. This is from the beginning of Nefesh Chaim, Shar Aleph, Perek Beis, your next source. Amnam lohavin inyan amro b'tzelem elokim deka. Kishem elokim yadua perusha. So he's focusing on the Havana of Elokim, right? Elokim, which we saw in the previous thing. So in the previous Zohar. So Shem Elokim yadua perusha shehu moresh shehu yisbarach shemo bal hakochos kulam. And in fact, when we daven, we should think about that when we say the word Elokim. Vinyan mashu yisbarach nikra bal hakochos ki lo kamidas bas vidam midas kadosh baruch hu ki ha'adam kishabona binyan May eight ein hakav ein habone bore umamti az mikocho ha'et rak shalokeach etzem shekvar nivru umisadrim bevinim va'acha shekvar sad sidram lefi ritzono im shachacho im shekocho husar v'nistalik mehem im kolze habinim kaim. So this seems to be a similar point to what we were saying before from the Alter Rebbe, but we're going to see it's a subtle difference. So he's comparing the way a person would build something with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So when a person builds something, so after he's finished building it, it's done, it's left, it's there. The binyan is kayim, even though the koach of the bona is no longer there. Aval hu yisbarach shemo, kimo bal v'riyas ha'olam, ha'olamos, kulam, b'ram v'himtiyam, hu yisbarach, yesh me'ayin, b'kocho, not so with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the only reason the world exists is because every moment, at every time, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly being mashpia, new light into that, new chios, right? L'mashal. This isn't a perfect example, but you know, if you have a light in a room, so standard lights, you flip the switch and then it's done. The light will stay on. But imagine you had a light that was like a button, that the light was only on as long as you're holding down the button. So that's what this would be. So if he were to remove his koach, the hashpa of his koach, even for a second, so they would cease to exist. They wouldn't exist, right? So what is in the world? The koach of Hashem, and that koach is constant. And if to stop for the world would return to tohu vavohu. Like we say in davening, call ace baraka. Okay. So that's the Nefesh Chaim, and I would say the more classical way of looking at things. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's koach that's constant. But so how is this different than what comes next? So let's take a look at the next source from Magid Varvliakov. Okay, we're going to see, maybe, I'm not sure, if in Chassidus we have a slightly different perspective. Tchilas ha'kol, ra'ledes, shem lo chol ha'arts kevodo, v'les ha'sar panui mine. Okay, we've seen already from the Zohar. Same lashon that we saw before from the Magid, that it's not just that there is the koach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that is sustaining the world, but here we have something else. Here we have this concept of chios habore baruch hu. Not koach, not just koach, but chios.
So
hamugsham hazeh kineshama begof, right? So what's going on? There's, again, let's pay attention to the Lashonos. It's not just the koach, like we saw in the Nefesh HaChaim, or even in the Zohar, but it's the chios. Umimenu yisbarach nimshach chios b'chol davar marom ha-mailos ad lamata b'tachtonim. One more quote. This is from the Alter Rebbe, Shayichu v'emuna perek vav, aval kodesh baruch hu ha-mehaves ha-kol mi-ayin li-yesh ha-kol bato b'mitzius etzlo kimo or ha-shemesh b'shemesh. Everything in reality, in a deeper reality, is batel to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And he has a mashal over here. There's a mashal that he said already, I think, in the second parak. It's like the rays of the sun in the sun, right? The rays of the sun, in other words, when we're on earth, so we could perceive rays of the sun. But the rays of the sun are inside the sun, are totally batel to the sun. And that is the nature, in other words, that's a mashal. So the first we might think the mashal is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence in the world is like the rays of the sun. He's out there and he shines into us and he's mashpia into the world and gives kochos to the world and allows everything to happen like the rays of the sun on earth. But he's saying in reality, no, that's not the way it works. In reality, it's totally batel, right? Chiyus HaBoris Baruch HaShochin B'davar Hamugsham. So like he said, there is chiyus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Davar Hamugsham. And it's actually totally mevatalit. We menu yisbarach nimshach chiyus b'chol davar marum hama'alos ad lamata b'tachtonim. I'm sorry, I skipped, I went backwards. Where was I? Right. Masha'en kein. Hashemayim va'aretz shekol atzmusam umahusam nisav v'mayim v'efes hamuchlat rak b'dvar Hashem v'ruach piv yisporach v'gam adayin tzav dvar Hashem li'olam v'shofeya bahem tamid b'chol rega u'mehaveh usam tamid me'ayim li'yesh k'hishavos ha'or me'ashemesh b'soch guf kador Hashemesh atzmo derech masho v'im kein Heim b'teilim b'emes b'mitzi us legamrei legabeyesh dvar Hashem, right? So very, very awesome. The emes, they're actually batel to mitzios Hashem. Legamrei, legabey dvar Hashem. V'ruach piv yisbarach hamiyuchadim b'mahuso v'atzmuso yisbarach. So even though at first glance, the idea of the Nefesh HaChaim and the Alter Rebbe, let's say, or these Talmidim of the Baal Shem Tov sound very similar to each other, right? The Baal Shem Tov is saying that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly creating, and Nefesh HaChaim said HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly creating. However, what Rav Avimi points out is, no, there's actually a very, I think it's subtle, but still significant difference between the two perspectives, because it's not just HaKadosh Baruch Hu's koach that allows the world to exist such that if he removed that koach, it would cease to exist, but rather, like he says, that it's the chiyus haborei that shochin b'davar hamoksham, such that Etzem, they're bottle to his metzius entirely. Now, again, the more we appreciate that, the more we can understand where the absolutely all-encompassing hashkacha is coming from. Because after all, everything is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If we were just open up our eyes, we would see it. We can't open up our eyes, he says, lo nitan rishus to people to see it. But if we knew how to see, and certain tzaddikim can see this way, then we'd see nothing but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We would see nothing but HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, again, if that's true, if a person knows how to look with the right glasses, again, we don't know how to do this. And to some degree, it's lanita and rishus. But if we knew how to look properly, and we were looking at that stick on the floor or that leaf on the floor, we would see that we're looking at HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Im Kein. So naturally, it would make sense that there would be this hashgacha. Now, I don't want to overemphasize this point, because though this might be somewhat paradoxical, these sources, the Alter Rebbe didn't deny the reality of our existence or the existence of Metzius. Though again, certain phrases sound that way. I think it's very clear from other things he said, and it's also obvious that we do exist and that the world does exist. So on the one hand, he is saying that our perception of existence is illusionary, but at the same time, he's not denying it entirely. And even, let's say, going back to the Shar Yichud V'Amuna, so even though, let's say, in the first three chapters of that Sefer, he emphasizes this idea that we've seen that really there's nothing besides him, to the extent that everything else is just being is mamish chiyuso. But at the same time, let's say in Perek Dalet, I think he goes ahead and he asks the kasha, so why do we perceive anything? And he points out that there are sort of other forces. There's Hashem, but there's Elokim. There's Chesed, which is this overpowering, or Gedula, but there's also Gvura. There's also Tzimtzum. There's also Magain. So there's the Shemesh, but the Magain. And again, it's very important to explain. This isn't like opposing forces. There's everything is from him. And even these forces are merely Kalim that he created so as to allow everything else to exist. So it's not that he's denying the existence of everything else, but at the same time, there is a very big chiddush here in terms of how to look at the world, in terms of the theology. And I think it's mistaber that the chiddush in terms of hashgacha stems from this chiddush about the way in which he exists and the way in which he controls the world. Okay, so that was the first part of what I want to talk about today. We're going to get back to the Baal Shem Tov's position in just a minute, because there's going to be another aspect to it we haven't yet explained. But I want to first look at some non-Hasidisha thinkers and see their approach to this question. So I think we'll start with a piece from Rav Dessler. Rav Dessler, along similar lines to the Hasidisha thinkers we've seen thus far, argues that Teva does not exist. What we perceive as nature is simply what happens frequently. When we observe that an apple falls from a tree and it doesn't float in the air, so we characterize that phenomenon as nature, as Teva. We call it the law of gravity. But in reality, a gravity is really nothing more than a description of past events. On a fundamental level, there is no difference between the apple floating up or falling down, because in reality, the apple only falls down because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to fall down. Teva is simply the screen. It's the means by which HaKadosh Baruch Hu hides his hashgacha by making it such that things act in a predictable way. But it's not really predictable. It's just that's the way it's most common. So ultimately, Teva does not really exist at all. It's an illusion. It allows people to make this mistake. It allows for free will. But in truth, it doesn't really exist. It's an illusion. Let's take a look at some of the Makoros that say this. So in your sheets, sorry, my computer keeps on freezing. So let's first look at Rav Dessler, this piece from Echtom Eliyahu. Nitzayir na'lanu ilu ra'inu kever asher hames nikvar bo kvar ne'achal kol besaro v'hi afar. V'hine lat lat me'omek ha'kever maschil et smoach Gam Adam Ve'ola Derech HaKarka. So we witness resurrection of the dead. Vakever Niftach Vayose Adam Chai Kachol HaChayim. Ma Yinu Omrim. Haim Ein Ze Neis Gadol Shal Tchias HaMesim. Vimke. Lama Lo Navchim B'Neis Ze Gam B'Tua. Right? So we would say, naturally, we say that Tchias HaMesim, that would be a nace. But what happens every day when you plant a seed, it grows into a plant. There's no nace there. That's Teva. But in reality, it's the exact same thing, right? You put the seed in the ground, hanizris ba'aretz, v'azara nirkav l'gamri, then it sort of falls apart, decomposes. V'achar kach, maschil etzmoach, mitoch harikavon. Ha'im ein ze neis shel tchias ha'mesim amish, b'li hafresh, there's no difference between this and tchias ha'mesim. V'vadei kenu, aval hafresh, So the only difference is that we're not used to seeing dead people come back alive. There is no difference at all. Ki ha'olam kulo ein lo shum siba zulas ritzono isbarach. There is no other cause for anything happening other than ritzono isbarach. The ritzono ha'inu maisav v'hanagaso ki chol asher v'ritzono misavem yalav. Rak she'anu korim lo neis. Ha'inu ratzon she'yishaveh ha'inyan shelo hur v'luvo. Fine. And again, just skipping a little later towards bolded. Hateva einenu mitzias klal el rak achizas einaim la'adam shiye makom litos v'gam livchor be'emes. This idea is found in many other thinkers. Some don't formulate it as in such a extreme fashion as Rav Dassler, but here you have a passage from the Gra from Yahal Or that may hold this way as well. A letter from the Chazon Ish. And we've talked about the position of the Chazon Ish. It's a bit complex. We noted earlier, a couple of weeks ago, that there might be a steer in the Chazon Ish. But here, in this particular letter, Ki kol ma shanu korim teva ha-mechuvan b'zeh ratzon ha-yoser matmid. Teva is just what happens more frequently. Shalom aveh, shalom ha-yosis baruch. And like we saw as well in the Chazon Ish in Emunah B'tachon, shein mikra ba'olam v'chol anas etachz ha-shemesh ha-kol b'achraz ha-mito yisbarach. There's a piece over here from Rav Moshe, which might be saying a similar type of thing. Hashalom biyoser, ein lo ispalos mineis yoser me'ateva hakavua, da kevan shegam ha'teva kavua yadua hu shehu nivra me'abore yesh me'ayin. Well, the truth is maybe he's not going this far. He might just be saying that teva is a bria of Hashem, just like a nes is a bria of Hashem. Ein lo chanes gadol yoser mizah. V'adirabba, she hamispael mineis yoser. If you're more amazed at a nace, so then that shows a little lack of faith. Your miktane emuna. Ukimamar mekam komos ilmali reisa lohemanta v'yesh shenenshu alzeh. So I'm not sure actually if Ramosh is exactly saying this. The first one I read it, I thought he was. Could be saying that be'atzim there's no difference because teva is a result of Hashem's creation, and so is a nes, but doesn't mean that there's no such thing as teva. Anyway, I was thinking about this a little bit last week because of the parsha. So in last week we read about Yaakov Avinu and his what he did to the sheep of Lavan to make them basically, even though he started off with white sheep, to make them spotted and speckled and the like. And he went ahead and he did these pulos whereby the sheep would look at the these sticks, and then they would produce offspring that resemble it. So Gabe Gross came to me and he said, well, how do we explain that? He said, it's interesting that corresponds to sort of the presumption in genetics for a long time, being acquiring characteristics that are based off things you see. You know, that's the way people looked at it. Not really consistent with modern genetics, though maybe not exactly. You know, there's actually relooking at certain things, but more or less classical genetics, but not what scientists now think. So how do we explain that? So I said, well, if you learn like Rav Dessler, it's really very geschmack, because the truth is there's no such thing as teva, and there's no such thing as, if we were to, there's no difference between, I don't know, making the color of a sheep be affected by splicing the genes versus making them look at sticks with spots and speckles. But at them, they're exactly the same. So we have to do hishtadlus, and hishtadlus is done by means of basically things that happen regularly. In other words, what's called teva, and what is teva? Teva is just what happens normally. I mean, Rav Dessler, though he's denying teva, agrees that you have to do hishtadlus based off of teva. So what is teva? What happens normally? Or in a certain sense, your hishtadlus is based off of your understanding of science. And if Yaakov's understanding of science was that this would work, so that was the right hishtadlus, and that would etzem have the exact same effect on the sheep as nowadays if we had to do that hishtadlus. So we might use CRISPR or genetic modification or the like if we needed to change the genes of a sheep. But etzem, there is no difference at all. They're exactly the same thing. So what? Okay, good. So what would we say if we don't learn like Rav Dessler, as we saw? Does seem like some Rishonim, at the very least, maybe most Rishonim, do acknowledge that there's such a thing as Teva. Now, again, when we say acknowledging that there's such a thing as Teva, what we mean is that Teva is something that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And that's generally the way things operate, except when there's divine intervention. But if we do acknowledge that there's such a thing as Teva, so how then do we explain what Yaakov did? You know, why should it have had any effect? So Gabe pointed to a very, very interesting passage. This is from Drashos Beis Yishai, which is from Diane Fisher, an incredible sefer. This is a footnote in the Maimer Halev Hamoach, which is an incredible piece. And this footnote, he really has a lot of very interesting things. He talks about, why it is that Kabbalah oftentimes uses terminology from Greek sort of wisdom. Many of the terms are used. He talks about, relates this to the halachos of whether you're allowed to kill a bug on Shabbos. If Chazal assumed that was because they spontaneously generate. So let's take a look at what he says. Now, I put this on the Makoro sheets, but, okay. So I just tried to send it to you, but the picture didn't come out, just the text. 1 second. Let me try this again. Oh, no. I don't know why I'm not able to put this onto the chat. Well, what we'll do it is we'll do it this way. Okay, I'm going to just send you the file on the chat. And again, I apologize for not putting this up earlier. Okay, so you guys should be able to see a file now from the chat. This is the same file as you downloaded earlier from Canvas, but you'll see that it has on it an additional piece that we just mentioned. Okay, so let's give you a minute to open it. Okay, so let's take a look at again where it says Drasha Beis Yishai. So he's explaining a very fascinating thing over here from the Rambam. The Rambam in Or Nivuchim, as we've discussed, had a sort of Aristotelian conception of the universe in which there are these concentric spheres. The earth is at the center, it's surrounded by all sorts of spheres. And there was this concept that there was a debate in the ancient world, whether when these spheres rotated, they made noise or music or something like that. And the Rambam writes in Or Nivuchim that he thinks that the correct mahalich is that of Aristotle, that when these spheres move, they don't make noise. However, when the Rambam is explaining the vision of Yechezkel, so there the psukim describe in the Ma'aser Merkava noise, Rash Gadol, and he says, "Ah, what is that noise?" So that noise is the movement of the spheres. So how could that be? I mean, Aliba de Emes, the spheres don't make any noise. So this is what he says. This is what Shlomo Fischer says, and the truth is that there were other much earlier thinkers who expressed the same idea. But we're going to see it over here. So we'll start with a paragraph that says Uliashev Zeh. Uliashev Zeh nakde mashkasa bedrush l'parsha shlach she be'agada enoig haklal. In other words, halacha we can get from Shemayim, not so with Agadata. El adirabba anumotzim shahayu mizgalim sodos al yidei kedishe elyonim l'mishe zacha lakach sham. Right? So first of all, they're Giluyim. They're Giluyim. We understand ideas through these various Giluyim. And that taka relates to a lot of the Chidushim in Sod that we've talked about today, and the Chiddush of Chasidus and the like. V'hinei, Hamamam b'mor nevuchim, kasav, b'nyan mar ma'aser merkava shel Yechezkel, ki ba lo hamar'a, Lefi hadei kolos. So why is it that Yechezkel perceived noise in the Galgalim? Because he assumed, like the ancient view, that there's kolos in Galgalim. So Mimela, that's what he saw. Vishakochav Vinoga Haim Lamala Minashamayim. In other words, watching a experiencing a nevuah is not like watching a movie. The perception that the Navi has, HaKadosh Baruch Hu conveys certain truths to the Navi. But how does the Navi see them? He sees them through his own lens, through his own perception of the world. So since Yechezkel's perception of the world was that these spheres have kolos, so Memela, that is what he perceived. Now, it's not the pshat that there's sheker in the nevuah, because the nevuah is really about the idea behind the nevuah. It's not so much the specific pratim. It's not about the image, the way in which they perceive it, but it's about the idea. And he writes that the Ramah has a similar thing in Tarsa Ola and the like. We don't have time to read the whole thing. Take a look over here. He has other places where we see this idea, and he explains that's why you see certain terminology. Like I said, why the Mekubalim are using terminology that's very similar to sort of the Greeks, ironically enough. talking about things like Chomer and Sura and Lev and Moach and Klaios and the like. Okay, so that could be the pshat. In other words, that is why Yaakov Avinu, why it is that he tried to affect the genetics of the sheep by the means of which he did. That's not, you don't have to say like Rav Dessler that shows that there's no tava. But rather the pshat is that the nevuah that Yaakov perceived in, right? Yaakov perceived in how to sort of affect these sheep in a nevuah. So that nevuah came to Yaakov by means of the way in which he perceived genetics and he perceived the world. At least al derech hapshat, there's actually a lot of Kabbalah in those parshios, the vudim, and for its different olamos and the like. But at least al derech hapshat, maybe that could be a way to look at that for someone who accepts that there is this concept of tava. I want to go back for a moment to the Baal Shem Tov. So we talked about before, what's the purpose of this all-encompassing hashgacha? And we said, basically, why not? And not only that, but adiraba, this is a manifestation of elokus. Now, I just want to consider some other aspects that the Lubavitcher Rebbe added to that, which are in that same letter that we saw before, but now light later down on your page. See, right over here, Inyan Ashkacha Pratis Shem Mivaer Morenu Amal Shem Tov Delozu Levad Dechol Prate Tnuos Hanivram Leminehem Heim Ashkacha Pratis Maboris Barach Ashkacha Pratis Halzu Hichios Hanivra Bikiumo Ella de od zos hat da tenua pratis de nivra prati hare yesh la yachas klali laklalas kavanas habria. Tenu, and he skips a little, tenua achas shel desha prati mishalem moshe makavana al yona b'inyan habria. So this is a very important point, which is that everything that happens is part of Hashem's plan. Hashem is a plan in the world, and it's not haphazard. Things happen because they're supposed to happen. And the truth is that even the smallest things can have effect on that plan. Yes, how grass, sort of like what scientists, some of them at least, call the butterfly effect, right? How a butterfly flapping its wings in Indonesia can, because everything is connected. So it could have an effect in New York. So that's sort of what he's saying, I think, over here. That if everything is here for a reason and everything serves a purpose. So, you know, Lamashal, the Rambam writes in the Hakdama the Perish Mishnayis that nothing was created for naught. So everything has a purpose. Everything is part of divine plan. The Rambam said that, though, about every species that exists, not about the particular animal. In other words, if there's a species, you find this yellow-bellied worm in the Amazon. So, yeah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created that species for a reason. It serves a purpose. It's part of something bigger. It has an effect. You may or may not be able to figure out what that effect is, but every species is here for a purpose. That's what the Rambam says. So the Baal Shem Tov is saying that idea, but going much further. He's saying that every detail of the universe serves a purpose. And after all, why not? Again, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all-powerful, why limit the scope of his plan or his providence? And why not ensure that even the smallest details are subject to that hashkacha? So that's a second reason for the all-encompassing hashkacha, right? The first we said was because of the theology, because of the elokus in everything. The second is because it's part of a plan. And finally, the third, which is, I guess, the one that's maybe we're least able to understand, but he writes, Lemekubalim hanal kevan deb'inyan agilgol yesh shemizgalgalim bedatzach l'chora barur shebedatzach ka'elu yesh bahem hashkacha pratis. According to some Mekubalim, so there's the possibility of Gilgulim even in inanimate objects, even in Datzach. I don't know what this would mean, but a rock could somehow be a Gilgul of someone. So if that's true, so then let's mistaber that there be hashkacha there. Now the truth is, first of all, it's interesting because he says shabedatzach ka'elu, those ones. Doesn't mean every rock is a Gilgal. This reason is actually, in a sense, something that the Rishonim could agree to, if you know, in a sense, because here we're just saying that, yeah, the Kabbalah is an account of people. And so if there's this particular rock is shayach to being a particular person, again, whatever that means, so then it's actually not such a surprising thing that there would be hashgacha, because there is hashgacha with respect to people. In this letter as well, the rabbi goes ahead and points out that despite the significant differences between the Rambam, let's say, and the Baal Shem Tov, b'inyan hashgacha, but there's also significant agreement. First of all, everyone agrees that there's free will. And to the extent that, and free will does not contradict hashgacha. Number two is that everything does come from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, ultimately. So, yes, there is a difference in these approaches. But first of all, nobody's denying free will. And somehow or another, whatever approach you take to hashgacha is compatible with free will. So that's number one. Number two is that, yes, ultimately everything is going back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Borei everything, Miyesh Miayin. So, well, there is machlokas about the pratim of that hashgacha. I think we could also look and appreciate that, in a certain sense, on the most fundamental things, there is agreement. And again, going back to the point that we were saying about when we read certain statements in certain types of thinkers that seem to contradict these ideas, Lamashal in the Ishbitzer, maybe also to a lesser degree in Reb Tzadok and others, you'll see statements that seem to deny free will. Those ideas also come from this idea that we've seen in Chassidus of HaKadosh Baruch Hu being everything, but ad kedei kach that they're everything, that it seems like they're denying free will. So how are we supposed to look at such statements? So I remember Rav Aaron Lapiansky talking about this, and he said, like, it's pashat that the Ishbitzer was not denying free will. You have to realize that some of these statements, these were stated in drashos, they were stated to emphasize a certain point and a certain teaching and a certain perspective. And it is, what he said is true. In other words, it is true that, you know, the way that Rizal put it is, b'makom b'chira laka yediyah, b'makom yediyah laka b'chira. And in the olamos where there is yediyah, there isn't b'chira. But that's, there are also other olamos. And from those perspectives, we do have Bechira. And, you know, the same thing like we're saying over here with respect to existence. You know, do we exist in a certain perspective from a certain sense? No, we don't. And in another perspective, yes, we do. And those perspectives are both true. They're somehow compatible. We may not be able to understand how they could be compatible, just like we can't always understand how free will is somehow compatible with divine foreknowledge. But it doesn't mean that both of those perspectives aren't true. And therefore you have to be careful when you see certain statements that sound very extreme, that you appreciate that those statements don't necessarily reflect the whole story, but rather a certain perspective. And if you want to get the whole story, then you have to look at both perspectives. Either way, I guess, okay, see, there's a question. I'll just conclude and then I'll take the questions. You know, I think I was planning to do much more on Hashkacha. We're going to talk about Hashkacha and Baal Chaim. I think we certainly don't have time today. I think that in thinking about this parsha that we've looked at in Hashkacha, one thing that we certainly should do is look at the Hashkacha in the world and in our lives and allow that to to inspire us. Whatever approach you take to Hashgacha, this is true. And it's important that Hashgacha, which is a sugya we've been working on for many weeks, not just be this thing that, like, academic thing that we look at and see the differing opinions and the like, but it's an avoda to see the Hashgacha in our life, to appreciate the Hashgacha in our life, to be makir tov for the Hashgacha in our life. So I'll take the questions now, and everyone should have a good Shabbos. Yes, Yitzchak, go ahead.
So I guess I'm just kind of struggling with, Rebbe mentioned the fact that one of the major drivers for the shitos that kind of highlight Hashgacha and like obviate the, like, the creation of Teva as a system is, because why not? Because if Hashem can do it, then why not ascribe it to him? But I think if ultimately Teva is a creation, if those who understand Teva, it's a creation that Hashem uses to run the world. So ultimately, mm-hmm. where would that distinction be between saying that Teva is a creation of Hashem that he uses to actively run the world, and saying that it's not really Teva, it's just Hashem controlling the world?
Right. Right. It's a very good question. I think you're right. In other words, I think there are two different perspectives. And that's what I was concluding with at the end, that I don't, the difference between those two perspectives is not as great as it would seem at first, right? First glance, you see, you know, is there Teva? There's no Teva. That's a big machlokas. It is a machlokas. But once you acknowledge that everybody agrees that to the extent that there is Teva, it's itself a creation of God, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is manning the world through Teva, and then also occasionally intervenes and changes Teva, so Mimela, the difference is not as great, but it's still a difference. In other words, is it the pshat that there are rules and the rules are operating? Or is it the pshat that each and every decision is made individually, right? Just like in the world. In the world, you could have two ways of running something. You could, like, set up a algorithm or whatever it is, and the computer will make the choices. And even if there's the possibility, you know, you'll put it on autopilot, and you'll give the pilot rishus to step in and change the autopilot if that's something, you know, if a correction or adjustment needs to be made, versus there being no autopilot and the pilot controlling everything directly, and every decision that's being made is directly a result of the pilot. So those are two different ways to fly a plane. And those are two different models to run the world.
Right, but I guess my question is, ultimately, the advantages of accepting Teva as a creation of God, and that there are systems. So I feel like the advantages of the way that impacts the meaning of our choices, meaning not just Bechira, our ability to choose, but Bechira, our ability to make an impact.
Mm-hmm. No, I hear what you're saying.
Meaning, once you accept the fact that Teva is a creation of God, don't you then lose the advantage of saying there's complete Hashgacha because Hashem can do it? Because either way, Hashem is doing it. So the advantage of obviating Teva kind of falls away.
Okay. I do think that is the svara that's behind those who believe that there is such a thing as Teva. That's certainly part of it. But today we were sort of focused on one perspective, but you're right. I think you're right. We said, you know, why not? But I think the Rishonim that held of it had an answer to that question. Yeah, I think you're making a very good point. Absolutely. Okay, Shkayach. Yeah, Jake, you go.
Does Rabbi just mind explaining, like, according to Rav Dessler, what's the role of Teva if really everything?
I think Teva is an illusion. There is no role of Teva. It doesn't exist.
So, like, why is it that gravity is, like, the natural state? Why wouldn't an apple just, like, randomly float up versus down? Like, why?
Because a gem wants it to fall down and not float up. Now, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu usually make apples fall down?
Right.
Because if, you know, if the Hashgachas Hashem was evident to all, so I think we would have no Bechira, right? And so what we see as Teva is the means by which he hides himself. And it's important for him to hide himself because that's what allows for Bechira, among other things.
Mm-hmm. Wait, does Rabbi have time just to go through that a little bit?
Yeah. Meaning,
what's the, why is it that if you understand that there's higher levels of Hashkacha, there's less Bechira versus if there's Teva, then there's more Bechira?
Well, imagine if you saw and you perceive HaKadosh Baruch Hu controlling absolutely everything. So it would be very hard to go against him. It would be very hard to sin. You know, we say that your Morah Shamayim should be like Morah Basar V'Dam. Levi, it should be that way. You should fear Hashem, fear a person. Right, and the Talmid of Mass and the Sulo. What do you mean? Of course, we should have more Marshamayim than more Basavid. But the answer is that because we don't perceive the Koach of a king, we see, we feel. Right, we see that when somebody violates the word of the king, chopped off. We don't see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's precisely what allows for our Bechira. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't do Nisim like Yitzchus every day.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I hear that.
And if you,
Okay, Shkayach Gadol. Thanks so much, Rabbi.
All right, Shkayach to you. Thank you so much. Kol Tov.
Good job.